Okay, good morning. So, we are reading the Heart Sutra first. Then, after that, the mandala, as usual. Okay, everybody ready? Okay. I prostrate to the Arya Triple Gem. Thus did I hear at one time the Bhagavan was dwelling on mass of Vulture Mountain in Rajagriha, together with a great community of monks and great community of bodhisattvas. At that time the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound professor. Also at the time, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara looked upon the varied practice of the profound profession of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Then through the power of Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said this to the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara. How should any son of lineage train who wishes to practice the activity of profound professional wisdom? He said that, and the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara said this to the Shariputra. Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of the profound profession of wisdom should look upon it like this. Correctly and repeatedly beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, form is also not other than emptiness. In that same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristics, unproduced, unseized, stainless, not without stain. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomena. There is no eye element, and so on up and down. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, up to and including no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There is no exhale, existence, no attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely on and dwell the perfection of wisdom, the mind, without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reached the end point of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in three times also manifestly, completely written, unsurpassable. Reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the Sagat mantra, the mantra equal to the unequal, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, should be known as truth since it is not false. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is declared. Teyatha om gate gate para gate para sangate bodhi swa. Shariputra, the bodhisattva mahasattva, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commented the bodhisattva mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that, it is like that. One should practice the profound profession of wisdom just as you have indicated, even the Tathagatas rejoice. Bhagavan, having thus spoken, the Venerable Shariputra, Arya Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding in their entirety, along with the immense Vasudevas, Gandharvas, were overjoyed and highly praised them. Kala jebe ne jo thamba ne mu she su tu ma ve lu ba po la ma ye bu shin se ne su khan de so la cha se lo a ga samara da she ta ma. Samarada Shadara Samaraya Be Geri Donda Gyaju Shivadam Midu Nebe Gendam Chevadam Tumba Gyujin Puzum Sokyur Veta Shite Gyan Tengdiru Dele Shu Shu
Yeah. Listen to the discourse with the proper motive cultivated, as it is repeatedly found in the teachings of the great lineage masters. Okay, now today we are at this point. Transformation of bad circumstances into the path to enlightenment, or path of enlightenment. In the other versions, this out of the 7 point, this point is translated as transforming adverse circumstances into the path to enlightenment. So it's almost the same. Then in this one, bringing unfavorable conditions into the path to enlightenment. So these are the different ways how they translate the heading, the portion itself. Anyway, the meaning is same, and so the first line in this, under this category, is under this kind of caption, or under this portion, is when the world is filled with evil, and then it must read with the next line, transform all mishaps into the path to enlightenment, or path of enlightenment. Then, in the other version, And it goes like this. When the vessel and its contents are filled with negativities, transform these unfavorable conditions into the path to enlightenment. And in this one, when the environment and its dwellers are full of negative forces, transform adverse conditions into path to enlightenment. So it's like that. A lot of differences of usage of different words and terms. Anyway, the meaning is like this. First, we divide this portion into two categories. First one is general overview, or a brief kind of introduction of this portion, and then the actual kind of detailed instructions. And these first two lines, these fall into this category of the general introduction or the brief introduction. And through this, what is explained here is in our daily life, as a result of having various types of misdeeds and the misconduct done, and negative and the harmful karmas accumulated repeatedly and continuously, what happens is, as a result of those harmful karmas, from the time to time we've encounter a specific harmful and disturbing environment around us. Like the imbalance and disturbances of the external spirits, like the disturbance caused by certain heavenly spirits, or a kind of spirits of like Naga spirits, such things. And in certain occasion, the negative forces, the strength of the negative forces increase, and it creates us problems. And in other circumstances, the sickness and poverty and famine and like war and the battles and arguments, like those kind of things happen around us. Like those types of inner obstacles or kind of external obstacles, those things arises from time to time. So whatever such thing arises, will it be a kind of related to the environment, or will it be related to those things dwell in that environment? All those things which creates problems to us, which makes us feel like all the mishaps are arising against us, we need to kind of intensively train ourselves into the path and into the practice of mind training. And by training ourselves intensively and strongly into the mind training, what we need to do is we need to transform those things into kind of those disturbing and obstructing and harming circumstances and the environment and those conditions into a supporting factor or a supplementary factor to enhance our practices. This is very important. We need to take all those inappropriate circumstances or conditions as through the approach transform them into certain kind of conditions that may support our practice, the mind training practice, and so on, in general practice and mind training practice. And all those things that obstruct and obstacle our practice and all those things, we need to find out a way and transform them into the supporting factors. And all those things that causes harm to us, any external spirits or those things, we need to accept them in the form of one's own Dharma teacher and one's own Dharma friends or something like that, and transform everything into the path of the enlightenment or path towards the enlightenment. So this is a general overview on this part, and the important thing here is like in general, when we are not disturbed by the things, external things, it appears like we are doing quite well in our practice. But when suddenly we encounter those disturbing factors in our life, disturbing circumstances in our life, then if we break up, if we broke down and feel and do the same thing as any other non-practitioner, then that shows us, that that symbolizes that our practice is not on right track and we are not doing enough. So it is important to have a strategy, and it's important to have a will and wish, strong sense of wish, to accept whatever negative things happens in one's life as some kind of support from some kind of way to push oneself more towards the practice and towards application of the path and instruction in one life, one's own life. In general, it is very common thing that there are two different approaches in general. There are certain people who, when they encounter the painful and disturbing circumstances, they completely broke down and show up their ordinary inner sense or ordinary inner self. They react in that way. And there are certain other practitioners who are well advanced. When they encounter those things, those things, the arising of those things itself, it enhances their practices and encourages and inspires them to do more. So this is here the difference between two persons. So if we do the same thing that as a common ordinary being, then that is not a right approach. As long as we are a practitioner of the mind training, or we are a trainee of the mind training instructions, so we should or we must train the other way up, so that things will, whenever certain things happens, we could be able to transform those things into our own benefit. If a sickness happens, transform that sickness, the physical discomfort, into the practice of Tonglen and try to benefit oneself through that thing happening. If certain person creates a problem, then take it as one's own guide, one's own spiritual guide or something like that, and then driven by that, try to squeeze some kind of helping and supporting messages from out of that. If a practitioner is kind of open to the external circumstances and external environment, there is no shortage of Dhamma messages out there. There is an expression in Tibetan Buddhist practice which says that appearance of all the things, whatever happens surrounding the practitioner in a form of the advice, in a form of the instruction to carry on the practice. So it can be done in that way. Given the condition that practitioner trains themselves properly in a proper direction. So this is it's a general instruction here about how to transform the discomfortable and uncomfortable and disturbing circumstances that happens in our life, in favorable conditions that happens in our life. Here, a great master, Selimba, says that whatever bad conditions and circumstances we encounter, it's a reminding note to do the practice of Dhamma. So we need to learn how to carry on like that. And whatever evil spirits and the harmful spirits happen to create problem to us or disturb us in our life, we need to learn that these are the miraculous deeds of the Buddha, so that he wants us to do the training and practice so that these things are happening to us, to remind ourselves, once again, to remind ourselves the practice. And then if some kind of sickness and the pains, such thing happens in our life, we need to understand those things as some kind of sweeper that have the capacity to sweep away all those negative deeds, whatever bad karmas we have accumulated. And then if we happen to go through kind of extreme sufferings, we need to understand those things as a kind of minor tremors of nature. If we happen to experience minor tremors of the nature, we won't take it very seriously. It's some kind of nature. So we need to understand that in that way. So this is how the great master Suvarnadipi used to explain the unfavorable conditions, how to transform them into one's own practices. And even the Bodhicharya avatar also have a lot of verses on these kind of practices. Now, the next portion here, the detailed explanation of this practice, how to carry on this portion into the path and train oneself properly into the path. Excuse me, I'm going to change. Shakti. Then for the next portion, the detailed explanation is further divided into two portions. How to transform these circumstances into supplementary factors towards of one's own practices mentally. This is the first one. And how to transform those factors into a Dharma practice physically or vocally or in a conduct. So that is the second one. Now out of these two, the next line deals with the first portion, how to transform them into the supporting factors mentally through the contemplation and thought kind of transformation. So it goes like this: whatever you meet unexpectedly, join with meditation. Now in this version it reads, immediately apply whatever you meet to meditation. And in this, and instantly apply to meditation whatever I might happen to meet. So all of these translation use the word meditation. But as I told you earlier from the beginning, the word, Tibetan word gom, is normally translated as the word meditation in English. Meditation in English probably is a very specific word. It appears to me like that, but I'm not an expert in this linguistic matters. But anyhow, it appears like meditation is very specific just to the mind. But the word gom is not necessarily specific to the mind. It does have a wider meaning in terms of to familiarize oneself with something. It could be kind of familiarizing oneself with certain type of vocal conduct and certain type of physical conduct. So it is not necessary that it is specifically meant about some kind of mental exercise or activities. So gom have a much wider meaning compared to meditation. But unfortunately, when we communicate, we have to use certain language. There is no kind of invisible transformation of information. So when we use the language, we have to use the language which is available in the kind of usage in the community, human society. So that is a kind of, that is some kind of discomfort, some kind of limitedness of usage of language. So that is the reason why in many occasions the great masters and the Buddha always explains that emptiness, the explanation of emptiness through the word has huge kind of limitations. Because emptiness is a concept which is beyond the language. Because language is based on the mundane concept, and emptiness is a concept which is far more beyond the mundane understanding and mundane concept. So for that reason, there is a huge limitation. We always find a huge limitation while we do try to teach the emptiness, explain the emptiness through the languages. So in the same way, it's like that. Anyhow, I think in the course of time, when people keep teaching these things in the English language, in the course of time, the the meaning and the word that we use gradually get closer and closer and blend together. That is how it works. That is how the language works. Initially, it appears like these two meanings, the meaning and the word is quite far away. But then, if we continuously keep using that in that context, because it's changing, you know, change is always there. So the things start kind of getting closer and closer, and there will be a certain period when the things get exactly blended. But is it going to happen or not? It's a matter of time. Time will only tell it. We don't know. So it's like that. So here, it says that whatever you meet unexpectedly, suddenly, join with meditation. This word "join" is it means to apply or to carry it into one's practice. Join with meditation means carry it into one's practice or transform it into one's practice. So how? Now here, in this sense, it's more kind of a mind-specific word here. So here we say, transform it into your own practice through meditating on it, through contemplating on it. So how to do that? So now here we have few verses. There is a verse that came from a great pandit of probably from Kashmir, which is named in Tibetan Khache Penchen. In his writings, especially on the mind training, he says that whenever joy and happiness arises, may I transform those things into a great feast and dedicate it to all the sentient beings. So that the whole space is filled up of joy and happiness. And when I encounter or when I become kind of unhappy and encounter the pain, may I have all those sufferings and the pain of others taken on myself, so that the whole ocean of suffering and pain be completely dried up. That kind of training is a mental training. Mentally, of course, in our life, there are a lot of moments that we feel high and ecstatic and happy. So, if we train ourselves mentally to share that, to offer that to all the living beings, of course, there's nothing is going out, but it's a mental training. It's a mental transformation. In the course of time, that kind of transformation will definitely bring a lot of change, physical change and vocal change, and a lot of changes. But initially, there is nothing going out, there is nothing coming in, but it really helps to build up a better type of mind and mental approach and attitude and thought process. So this is very important to understand. That is why here it is explained in this portion, when we mentally try to transform those unfavorable circumstances into the supporting factors of the practice. And then another in Tibetan, this is a Tibetan master, previous one was the Indian, named Gyawa Yangwenba, writes, the non-virtuous and the negative deeds and these pains and unfavorable conditions, whatever that appears, variable things that appears, all are like the teachers. So whatever happens and whatever appears, it doesn't really matter. So his approach was like that. And he also further says that when happy and when I'm ecstatic, I don't like it. I like to be suffering and being low. Because being ecstatic and being being capable to receive a lot of wealth and those things is a source of great suffering. Because as a result of that, I will definitely end up in collecting huge wealth and all those things, which will definitely create more and more problem to me. So that was his approach. Mentally, he always contemplate and meditate in that way. When I go through pain and low side of my life, it is good because through that I can work hard and push myself forward to do more practice of the Dharma. So he says that being a man in poverty or poor man is good to be able to do a lot of practice and to do the Dharma practices. And he further says that when people appreciate me and praises me, I don't like it. When they condemn me, and when they insult me, I like it. Because when people appreciate me and praises me, I start feeling proud and arrogant. And when people condemn me and then insult me, that helps me to find out my own mistakes and faults. So that is good. So he further says that I don't like to be happy. I like to be unhappy. I like to suffer. Because if I am happy, then all the five different types of poisons will start arising and flourishing. When I am unhappy and when I am going through suffering, then that suffering itself helps me a lot to reduce the bad karmas of past. So for all these reasons, suffering and unhappiness is a great blessing of my master. So the approach of these great masters and these great practitioners are like this. Suffering is a path towards a bigger happiness. If there is no suffering, there is no pain, there won't be that access towards a bigger happiness, a true happiness. And suffering is also a connecting point of all the attainments. And suffering is also a supporting factor to produce the realizations. So these are the reasons, these are the ways how these great practitioners looked into the role of suffering to enhance their own practices, to encourage them to do more practice, to inspire them to work more and stronger in their practices. For that reason, it's very important to accept or have a perspective towards the suffering that it is an important thing to have in life, and towards the happiness. It is something that is very destructive. It is something that is very harmful. If these minor happiness comes over and we get entangled in those things and we are distracted by those things, those will never let us liberated from the whole existence of the samsara. So those are really disturbing ones. If we don't have a sense of voluntary sense of willingness to if it is necessary to bear the suffering in order to practice the Dhamma, then there is no way that we can achieve the Buddhahood, or we can achieve the Nirvana, or we can achieve the liberation. So in order to achieve the liberation, it is very important to have this strong sense of willingness, a voluntary sense of willingness to embark into certain Dharma practices which could be hard and difficult and painful. And then, as long as we have this deep sense of yearning towards one's own happiness and never see any kind of fault in that, there is no way that one can cultivate the bodhicitta. So in order to cultivate the bodhicitta, it is very important that one should always see this inner sense of willing to be happy for oneself be get rid of. As long as we retain that, there is no way that we can seriously wish to benefit others. So, if we don't work hard and with a deep sense of hardship and huge efforts with a deep sense of diligence, without thinking about how painful it could be, how hard it could be to carry on the practices of six perfections and various other practices of bodhisattva, there is no way that we can be perfected or we can complete the practice of the path. So for that reason, it is very important from the beginning to generate a deep sense of willingness to take the pain, take the suffering in order to achieve the true happiness. So here it's very important to differentiate two things separately. Whatever happiness we are talking here that we need to abandon, that we need to disregard, that we need to avoid having a sense of yearning, is the present momentary and obsolete variety of happiness, a wrong, a misunderstood variety of happiness. If someone is a yearning to achieve the Buddhahood, in order to benefit all the sentient beings, just that kind of wish, that is a different thing. So these are the instructions how to transform the unfavorable conditions and circumstances into one's path through contemplation. And the second portion here is how to do that in conduct, in practice, in action. That is explained in the next line. Four efforts are best methods. And in this one, it says that possesses the four preparations, the supreme method. And when this one says that the supreme method entails four actions to use. So, what does it really mean? The four actions, first we need to understand the four actions. That these four actions are the accumulation of the merit, or accumulations of the collections, through dedicating whatever good deeds one have done to achieve the Buddhahood, that kind of thing, or various types of accumulations, the merit and the collections. This is the first one. The second one is to purify or to sweep away all those misdeeds, negative karmas, non-virtuous deeds, and the downfalls. Those are disturbing factors. Those are negative conditions to cultivate the path. If we have those things, those will definitely be a strong hurdle to cultivate the path. So for that reason, it's very important to purify those things and get rid of those things. So that kind of practice. Then to do the offering of dharmas to evil and harmful spirits and to the disturbing forces, with remembering their kindness and also with a deep sense of compassion towards them. And then the fourth is to request the protectors to help one's own practice through their protection and through their support. So these are the four efforts that one should kind of try to try to combine in one's own kind of practice of mind training, or the kind of transformation of attitudes. And through those, through these practices, one can try to expand, or one can try to strengthen one's practice of mind training. These are the best methods that one can use in order to strengthen the practice of mind training. So now we are moving into the next portion of the text, that is the fourth point, summarized presentation of the long life, a lifelong practice. And in this one, this it says that integrating the practices in a single lifetime. So the title is like that, and under that, the first line that we are having here is we here also we need to read two lines together in English, but in Tibetan these two lines are separate. You see in one line in English, the line goes like that, this, the practice, the five strength, the condensed essential instructions. In Tibetan, original Tibetan, the condensed essential instructions is the first line, and then practice the five strengths is the second line. It works in that way in that Tibetan Tibetan grammar and poetry, but then it doesn't really fit that way in English, so we have ordered it in that way. And in this version, let's look at here. In brief, the essence of the instructions. It also does the same thing. Is to apply the five forces. So it orders in according to the Tibetan version. Now in this one, in brief, the essence of the quintessence teachings is applying the five forces. So now, what does it mean here? First, we need to understand the five forces. What are the five forces? The five forces are a motivating force of a strength of kind of a motivation. Strength of the motive. Or the intention, it's the same. But in Tibetan, this word is very, very kind of... the Tibetan word is very, very distinct word that is used here. We have different words for the motivation and intention in many occasions. So in this here, the word, the actual word in Tibetan, that means pembe tok. The pemba is a very, it's a kind of, a, it's related to some kind of verb. So this verb can be very kind of commonly used in many ways. For a common usage, just take an example. If I take a small kind of pebble in my hand and I throw it, that is also pemba. But in this sense, that in this case does have some meaning like that. How does it apply? You see, if I throw something from here, a pebble from here, it will remain in the air as long as that strength doesn't cease. This is important to understand. So in the same way, if we are motivated by a strong sense of intention, then that strength of that intention will influence those acts as long as that strength remains there. As soon as the strength of that motivation is seized, that act is not no more influenced by that. So here we need to understand that in that way. But in reality, this word, in kind of real terms, this pemba is not a direct noun for the motivation. It's not a direct noun for the intention. But it can be explained in that way through its functional properties. So then the second thing is so what kind of the motivation we are talking here is I'm not going to give up my mind to be controlled and influenced by self-grasping thought, or to be controlled and influenced by self-cherishing thought. That kind of motive is important to have. Then the second thing is the kumbhito. This is the habituation. It's like it translated habituation, but it's a habituation, but more like a acquired familiarity, sense of acquired familiarity. Now what does it mean? Constantly remain in the practice of mind training or the thought transformation and make it a habit, or make it a kind of a daily lifestyle, so that in the course of time you acquire, you become familiar with it. And once you are familiar with it, it's difficult to stray away from it. So that kind of things. Somehow it's a kind of a habituation. It's a sense of kind of familiarity. It's, I think, more explanative. And then that kind of strength, the second one. And then the third one is the strength of the seed. Strength of the seed here refers to the bright or positive seed. And bright or positive seed, in which way, in which sense here, is in order to have the bodhicitta maintained continuously, not have it lost or deteriorated in one's own mind, to do the practice of accumulations of merit, So those kind of things. That is the seed of the strength of the seed. Then, also in the other words, we say strength of the bright and positive seeds. And then the fourth one is strength of elimination, or strength of a kind of getting rid of those negative things. In this case, to avoid or to never provide any chances to the self-grasping mind or the self-cherishing thought, to keep continuously stopping it from arising. Sense of elimination, a kind of strength of elimination, or something like that. Then the fifth one is the strength of prayer. So what is the strength of prayer? Is whatever necessary kind of those merit and those collections which is necessary to keep the bodhicitta flourishing, strengthening, growing, to pray for those things to have flourishing and multiplying in oneself. So these are the four, these are the five strengths and five powerful practices, or the five strengths, we can also say that one should have in order to keep the practice of bodhicitta continued and alive and kind of growing throughout the life, throughout one's life. Then the so these are the kind of quintessential, these are the kind of condensed essential instructions of the mind training practice. And the next line here is Mahayana instruction of Hoa. Here, in this one, we read like this. The five strengths are the Mahayana instructions of Hoa. Hoa means ejection of consciousness at death, or other ways. How you conduct is important. This end of the line. Now, in the other version, let's go here, where it says, the great vehicle instructions on transference are those five forces cherish this behavior. Yeah, so that is a little different one. And in here, the quintessence teachings of the Mahayana, transference of mind is the five forces themselves, while giving importance to my path of deportment. It's very different. Anyway, the meaning is like this. So these, we have, in many occasions, the practice of Poa is regarded as very, very important and precious. So for that reason, this is kind of, also covered here in this text. So in this text, it says that the most effective practice of the poa is the practice of these five strengths or these five powerful practices, which I already explained just before here. But in the case of when we do the practice of poa with the application of these five powerful practices, then these five powerful practices are kind of presented in a little different way. The previous one was specially connected to the practice of how to maintain the bodhicitta continued and growing continuously. Now here, in order to when the person is about to move out from this life, or even there, when they are alive, they can also do those things. So in this case, let's explain the five powerful practices, or five powerful strength, kind of five strengths. So these are, let's put in the same order, in like the previous one. The motivating strength or motivating power or the powerful motivation should be to not to have a desirous and desirous attachment, a sense of attachment towards one's body in this life. So especially when one is going through the last moments of their death, it is very important to avoid kind of a deep sense of desirous attachment towards one's life, one's own body, like that. And then the second one is to make a practice of the bodhicitta familiar to oneself through continuously training oneself into that. That is the power of familiarity or the habituation. And then the third one is the power of seed or the strength of the seed. That is, whatever those wealth and belongings one have, one should spend those things, give up those things to accumulate more merit. So this is the many kind of a very standard practice of the great practitioners. Before the death, they try to give away whatever their belongings are, so that with using that, those illusion-like wealth of our life to make something beneficial and something more valuable, like merit in the collections. So that is that kind of approach. the third. The fourth one is continuous contemplation on the harmfulness of the delusion, the negative emotions, negative thoughts, and driven by that, to stop them. And then the last, the powerful prayer, or the strength of prayer, is to pray continuously to not to get separated or departed from the bodhicitta, the practice of the bodhicitta, the bodhicitta itself in the future lifetime. So if a practitioner keeps these practices continuously done throughout the life, before the death, in the last moments of the death, then this is the best practice of poa, to transform the one's, to transfer one's consciousness from this life to somewhere more beautiful, more comfortable, and more suitable to carry on the practice, and come in contact with the Dharma, and continue the quest towards the Buddhahood, or towards the one's own goal. So, once you do those things, and this is a kind of, specifically this is more effective and more applicable during the last moments, those last days of the practitioner. Then finally, when it says that the conduct is important, how you conduct is important, and this conduct here refers to how should the practitioner sleep when they are getting closer to their last moment. The most preferable position to sleep is having one's right side lower and left side on top, the position named the sleeping position of a lion. When Buddha Shakyamuni passed away, he passed away in that posture, that position. So that is the most preferable position. So these are the instructions under this category, under this kind of portion. Now we go through the next portion, that is evaluation of the mind training. Now in this one, they say the measure of the trained mind, and then this one we don't have anything. Here in this one we see the measure of having trained our attitudes. So the thing is, first line here is, all teachings agree at one point. And this one reads, in this one, combine all the Dharma into one intention. And in this one, gather all Dharma into one intention. So, a little different from each other. Anyway, let's look into this one. Um, It says that all the teachings of the Buddha, whatever he taught, it agrees or it meets at same point. The point is meant for to eradicate and to eliminate self-grasping and the self-cherishing thought. So that is the meaning. So whatever Buddha taught, according to Mahayana teachings, Buddha taught whole sets of 84,000 dharmas or instructions. All those 84,000 sets of instructions, all of them meets at certain point. And that is, all of these teachings were meant for to eradicate and to eliminate the self-grasping and the self-cherishing thought. Some of those things are taught as a preparatory instructions. Some of those are taught as actual instructions, and some of those are taught as supplementary instructions. So this is a core point: to get rid of self-grasping and self-cherishing thought. And self-grasping, getting rid of self-grasping, is a very common objective of the middle school practitioners. And to getting rid of the self-cherishing thought is a very unique purpose and objective of great vehicle practitioner. So whatever Buddha taught all combines into a method to destroy these two disturbing factors, disturbing things. So that is it. Then so it's very important to have this understanding of the yard scale. It may appear like from time to time many teachings of the Buddha may appear contradicting to each other. But in reality, there is no way that Buddha's teachings can contradict from each other, because those are meant for same purpose. But it could be different in a way that it may be meant for specific level of the practitioners in specific circumstances and specific time. So it may appear like that, but in reality there is no way to have any kind of contradicting point in between the teachings of the Buddha. This is very important to understand. So this is the first yard scale that we need to apply in our life, that we must respect all types of teachings of the Buddha. Will it be a Theravadin? Will it be a Mahayanist? Will it be a Tantrainist? Whatever type of teachings are there, we must equally respect them. We must not disregard a single word of the Buddha. It happened in past in Tibet, and it happens from time to time in many other societies, that people, this is a very general kind of ordinary approach that people always feel our system is the best. And out of us, mine is the best. But in reality, as long as something is taught by the Buddha, it is equally best. But it is dependent on the taste, the mental disposition, intellectual capability, level of the practitioner, and all those things, how it applies to them. So for that reason, it's very important to have that kind of understanding and always respect all the different traditions and their teachings, what they teach. Maybe if you see something that won't be appealing to you, try to apply an understanding. Maybe it is not appealing to me, but maybe it could be very, very helpful and very, very effective to someone else. So for that, this is first yard scale that we should have, that kind of understanding. As long as we disregard or we find something that is dispensable in Buddha's teachings, probably that kind of person is not yet trained well in the mind training. So this is the first yard scale that we need to understand. And the second point here is explained. The evaluation of the mind training itself can be also explained like the standard for the trained mind or the benchmark for the trained mind. How to kind of measure what is a trained and what is not trained. How one should accept and agree that this is a trained one, this is not a trained one, not yet trained. So this is these lines here, we have six lines, these explains the benchmark and the standard. So the next line here says, of the two witnesses, hold the principal one, or hold the principal. And what is it in this text? It says, of the two witnesses, rely on the primary one. And in this text, it says, from the two witnesses, take the main. So, what does it mean? Whatever we do in our life, there could be only two types of witnesses, self and others. Nothing out of that exists. Evidence and witness are two different things. The environment and the things could be evidence, but could not be witness. To witness something, we need a live being, a living being. So when we talk about a witness, there is only two things that can witness it. Oneself, of course. One cannot do anything that one doesn't know, like unless someone is forgetful, that's an exception. Sometimes they have there is a sickness, amnesia and Alzheimer. In those cases, the person may forget it. They can recall it sometimes, but I don't know. Still, they are witness, but they have forgotten it. Then the other persons, there's only two possibility. So it is very important that out of these two, one should be one should be capable and one should be kind of, courageous enough to stand at the witness for oneself. We can cheat others, but we cannot cheat ourselves. Whatever we do, we will definitely know. Of course, in many things, in many circumstances, we have to consider other people's feeling and thought. But just thinking of other witness, and if others don't see and others don't know, then I can do everything else. If that kind of attitude is there, then that person may end up in doing a lot of wrong things. So it's very important to be one's own witness. That when it comes to a test and investigation or examination, be righteous and truthful enough to stand for one's own self as a witness. That is very important. And the next line here is, always maintain only a joyful mind. This, the witness portion is the second yard scale. It is a very important yard scale to measure the if the mind is trained or not. If one can stand in that way to oneself as a witness, then that person's mind is well trained, unless it is difficult. Then the second one is, it says, always maintain a joyful mind. And in here, it says, always rely on mental happiness alone. And this one says, and continually rely on mental happiness alone. What does it mean? Whatever happens, if one receives a plenty of wealth, or if all those wealths are gone out, lost, or if one becomes extremely happy and has a lot of joy, or if someone is going through the extreme pain and a lot of suffering, whatever happens, if the practitioner is capable to maintain an equality or equanimity and capable to maintain the inner joy, inner happiness, whatever happens to him, even if they earn a huge wealth, or even if they lost all of their wealth, or even if they fall into deep sense of pain and suffering, or other way, if they are in a very joyful condition, in any of those circumstances, those external circumstances never have an impact on the practitioner, and practitioner maintains that level of joy or inner joy or joy of mind. Always maintain only a joyful mind, that kind of thing. If it is maintained in that way, then that means that person has trained the mind quite well. If losing something makes the person depressed, and if suddenly winning a lottery makes that person extremely happy, then that means that person is not trained yet. So we have to understand that. And then there is another yard scale, or the benchmark. And the next is elimination of evil is the criterion of being well-trained. Here, what does it say? The measure of being trained is to no longer regress. And in this one, it says that the measure of being trained is being reversed. Now, this is very distinct from each other. Yeah. Let's go into the text. Text says that another benchmark of the trained mind is it is a kind of a, it has turned in the opposite direction from previous self. In the opposite direction from previous self means previously that person used to have a deep and strong sense of self-cherishing thought, self-grasping. Now, when the person gets well-trained into the mind training, then that self-cherishing and that self-grasping is reduced. Not completely eradicated, but anyhow, it is reduced, and in the opposite direction, they cherish others. Instead of that, they cherish others and kind of care for others with ignoring oneself. So that kind of approach, if that kind of opposite approach or reversed approach is acquired, then that is another benchmark of the mind being trained. Then the next line here is well-trained will acquire five great signs, and in this one it says that to be trained is to possess five signs of greatness. And this one, there are five great signs of having become trained. So, now, what does it mean? The five signs are like this. If a person is well trained in the mind training, they can endure, they can forbear, they can bear the pain, extreme pain. They can endure those extreme pains. And that is named great asceticism. Or that is also can be named great austere practitioner, where they can kind of endure and forbear with great difficulties and pain and sufferings. This is first sign of the greatness or a great being. Then the second sign is a well-trained practitioner will be a great being. That means a being that cherishes more the other than oneself. Then the third great sign of being a great practitioner is the great practitioner of virtue. The great practitioner of virtue means which never stray away from the virtuous conduct. that kind of being. And the fourth one is great practitioner of morality, or the great upholder of moral practices. A practitioner who never commits, and who's always very cautious about getting engaged into non-virtuous and the kind of negative deeds and the downfalls, even the slightest and even the tiniest one or minute one, they are always very cautious about not to have those committed. And finally, the great yogi. The great yogi means who trains oneself in the proper path and valid path of the Mahayana, the great vehicle. So these are the great, five great signs of being a great practitioner or being well trained in the mind training. So once these signs are acquired, that is another benchmark to qualify as a well trained person. And then the last line here in this portion is, if capable to practice even when distracted, you are well trained. This is in fact two lines. And just one line in Tibetan. If capable to practice even when distracted, you are well trained. And now in this one, you are trained when able even if distracted. And in this one, so if I'm able even when distracted, then I have become trained. So what does it mean? Even the person is slightly distracted from certain things, or slightly, how to say, flowing into certain kind of activities, but they can maintain those kind of values of mind training. If they acquired that kind of familiarity, deep sense of habituation and familiarity, and even the person is flowing into some kind of, deeply engaged with some kind of activities, but they don't have any chances to stray away from their mind training practices and mind training values, then that is the sign of the person's being well trained in the mind training practices. The example given here is a well-trained horse. A well-trained horse can run well even their attention is kind of, shaken for certain moments while they are running. They can still maintain that running very well. So that kind of thing. Even the practitioner get distracted, their attention is get distracted for a certain moment in a certain period, but they can remain in that practice of mind training throughout the time. If it is maintained in that way, that is a kind of the important benchmark or the standard of being trained, being well trained in the mind training practices. So let's just stop here, and we'll continue in the next session. Okay, thank you very much, Sajibhuk.
Chūjīn mē dō dhāma rē rāpa lī shīn yīn dē gēmbā Sāngē shīn dō mīk dē phayō Rōkūn nām dā shīn lā chū parāy Guru Ratna mē dē lā gān nē yā dā yā mī